Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 209 with the title, Inclusion That Actually Sticks. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Susan Drum. Susan is a leadership advisor and coach who helps organizations turn diversity into everyday performance by embedding inclusive habits that build trust, voice equity, and that lead to better decisions. When I asked Susan to describe her superpower, she said that it is spotting the invisible patterns that quietly run teams and translating complex neuroscience into simple, repeatable habits that help leaders widen perspective and make space for every voice. Hello, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And we were just chatting away there in the green room before we pushed the record button. And I think you said you're in Arizona. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's at the time that we're taping in the, we like to say we have 8 months of heaven for 4 months of hell when it comes to our art.
Yeah, so you are, it's quite cold snaps yeah. as well.
Like right now, it is truly heaven. It's, you know, I'm trying to think Celsius, but about 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And so just beautiful, beautiful, spectacular weather at the end of January, where the rest of the country seems to be in a freeze over. But then we pay a price in the summer where it gets blasted hot. And although the idea is if you have the flexibility like I do to leave during those months, then you're best to depart during those 4 months of intense heat.
Yes.
And we can have storms that run through around that time as well. You know, very heavy rains and then it would be dry. So, yeah, called the monsoons. Yeah. I really enjoy it here because I lived in the Northeast most of my life, the first portion, and I just don't do well with living in winter very. And I did also, by the way, live in London for 2 years. Loved that, but I'm addicted to the sun. It just makes me happy. I want to be in a place where the sun is shining every day. And sometimes people say, well, don't you miss the change of seasons? And I was like, no, if I want to go be in snow, I'll go book a holiday for 5 days, you know, in a ski resort and get some of that and then leave.
Pop up to Aspen. There's plenty of places with mountains.
Right. Yeah. It's a nice, if you can live in two places, it's ideal because you'll get such incredible weather when everywhere else doesn't seem that way. And then go off when it's, you know, more inhospitable.
Us weather.
Yes. Well, I think as human beings, we think we're chameleons and can see 360 degrees, but we can't. We have a central vision and a peripheral vision. And where we point our focus of attention, that's what we see. And we get very good. We usually develop patterns about what we want to look at. And that becomes a bit of a superpower because we get so good at looking that direction and studying that and understanding that. But there's something behind our head we can't see, and that's our blind spot. In some of the models I use, they very clearly show where your superpower lies, but where you kind of maybe have a liability you're not as familiar with. And I like to use models that are more inclusive in general that show that there's someone else looking in that direction by their very nature because of what they pay attention to. And so if I'm arguing, it's blue, it's blue, it's blue, and you're arguing, no, it's green, it's green, the model starts to show why that's the case and how actually they're your best friend in terms of growth, because they're looking into the area where you may not see what's possible. And so I think when you talked about the superpower is for me to really help people see their patterns and self-imposed limits that are inherent in who we are and start to widen that gap to shift their perspective so that new opportunities for growth, for success become available to them. Yeah.
And
for sure, it definitely starts to take this, you know, for some more rigid than others, right? It's like slowly chipping away at what people believe is possible. Exactly. And if you can, even more powerfully, if you can build the team that's accounting for your blind spots and recognize that the person that triggers you is probably the person that you have the most growth to learn from. There's something there. And so that's why I help people see the map of that. And they can start to see how this person actually can be beneficial to what they're trying to accomplish in the world. Yes.
That alternative, if you're not careful, what would it be? You grip hold, in fact, because you're worried about what is.
Yes, yes. And it's almost, my sense is there's even more gripping to the belief. But anything you resist, you give it power and you give it more power. So I don't think our answer is sort of more resistance. I don't see how that's been working out for us. It's sort of I feel like the answer is curiosity and like, let me understand that perspective and let me look from that. And what aspect of this could I incorporate or what gift could I give because of my superpower looking in the other way? Mm. And it starts to, I think the only way you get there is for people to start to recognize where that blind spot is, that they have it and where it is, and recognize that the gift that you bring to someone else is looking in their blind spot, but they also look into yours. Yeah, I think because, you know, anytime I hear like that's the way it is, like I want to be like, is it? Is it the way it is? And I would say we can if we approach it with curiosity on different perspectives.
They get one challenges them to without
peace. Right, right. And a lot of it is we're not really trained with language even that's inclusive. Like, you know, you could say, that's really interesting. Here's how I've looked at it before. What do you think of that perspective? Right? That's very invitational language versus, yeah, but what about XYZ, right? And that's what it's like, the energy of that exchange then will have, like I said, you bring resistance, the other person gets more resistant in their point of view. And then that's when you start to have the breakdown.
Yeah,
occur.
You entrench in your opposites, don't you?
Right. Yes. Gosh, it's this is the work of our times right now, you know? Yeah. And so there's different ways to go about it. I mean, sometimes picking the most divisive conversations are probably not the place to start. Like, I think we need to build skill set in having easier conversations first and opening our aperture, then work up to the more difficult ones. And so when I think about teams, when teams are working together, starting to learn like why that person is always throwing, let's say, a wet blanket or cold water over your idea. What are they actually motivated by? What are they actually looking to do? Because you're interpreting their behavior through your own motivations and your own type filter, we would say, and getting curious about what they're at. We make up reasons for why people do the things they do, but that's based on our own drive of motivation, right?
Where
the transition between how people can become more curious and engage in these types of conversations.
Because we get stuck in our in groups.
There was a wonderful video. I think it was actually designed to be a commercial, and I think it was Heineken, believe it or not. And the idea was that you could bring people with very polar views together over a beer to actually get to know each other as humans. And it's a very powerful story. You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's called Worlds Apart.
Do you know, have you seen
Worlds
this?
Apart. I use it in my training courses sometimes. Yeah, Worlds Apart.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Yes. So this is exactly what we're talking about, right? And so kind of coming without the preconceived notions, and what we actually find is we have more in common than we realize. Right. And I think that that story highlights it really well. Yeah.
And the solution is it's more tolerant. Because if you're just more likely to be, it's building.
And also, if we approach the conversation with, I want to get you to understand my point of view, then there's an inherent resistance. Nobody wants to be sort of told what to do, right?
Actually, I want to know, but if I understand, okay. And that's, I think that's, I think a lot of the things that Black.
Yes. Yeah. I totally agree with that. And so in order to help people understand their patterns, there are a couple different ways we go about that. Two modalities in particular that I've found to be really powerful. One is working with the Enneagram. Are you familiar with the Enneagram? Have you ever talked about it on the show?
No, go for it.
Okay, great. The Enneagram is a powerful model of the way we use it in our work is that there's nine different types of leadership styles, and each have, they're based on what you're motivated to look at, right? And each have a superpower and each have a liability that comes with them. And the model is very powerful because it's a systems model. So meaning it's showing the interrelationship between the nine different styles and how building high performance teams can happen when you have the right combination or diversity of these cognitive viewpoints, how people think. And so that's a really powerful tool because, first of all, people understand their own process of, gosh, yeah, I have developed this superpower to do something this way, and this is what I'm motivated to look at. But now I can also see what I don't see behind my head. And you got to create that opening first, such that then you bring the team together to say, and look at that person, Charlie, who happens to look in that, and I see now why I can't see what they see, but how it could actually benefit me. And that's part of the process and the magic of that, understanding. And then realizing, like, we've got some leadership style types that are not present on the team. And we don't even have that representation of the way that person would think or the types of questions they would ask in doing that work. So I think with that type of backdrop, this is where we get teams to be higher functioning, so that it's not to say, okay, you absolutely have to hire for every single, but recognize where the gaps are that what's present in the team and have someone do their best to sort of play that part, right? What are the types of questions? Let's say you're missing the loyal skeptic, which is type six on your team. Then you don't have that counterbalance. Everything is like full steam ahead. You don't have that counterbalance to say, here's the potential drawback. How are we going to mitigate for that? So you will need to, with your team, make sure before you make a head decision, you're like, we're going to take 15 minutes and look at what if this goes wrong? Because we don't naturally have that person on the team that does that. But we know we need to take some time to look at that. As hard as it is, maybe for the types that are on the team to do so, we've got to do that so that we make better decisions. And what I find is then that the best teams are cognitively diverse teams because they're representing these different perspectives and they're making better decisions as a result. So that's the Enneagram is one big thing. That's one way to do it. And then some actually do look for, you know, when we make our next hire, let's look for somebody who seems to have that skill set.
If you haven't got.
Yes. That's exactly right. Yeah. So for particularly for teams, that's why I've found the tool to be really powerful. And what's great about the Enneagram is no one owns it. It's an open source model that's been developed, you know, some would say definitely over decades, some would say even centuries. You know, they're actually finding deep connection with neuroscience related to this. So I recently was involved in a course called The Neuroscience of Change, and they did an entire segment just on the Enneagram and starting to understand how the brain formulates and gets kind of grooved into one of these nine types. And a lot of it, of course, has to do with upbringing and what we, things happen to us, right? As we,
socialization, yeah.
Right? And what we make it mean typically falls into nine different styles. And so that was very exciting to me because there's real neuroscience behind looking at the world in this way. And so, but it also allows people to recognize in themselves that they don't have all the answers. And that's the way you start to get curious about like, well, you know, I don't have all the answers. Let me ask some questions about people who see the world differently. So I find it's a powerful model for people to start to open up their curiosity. Yes. You know, there's another assessment we use that is looking at your internal experience under conflict or stress. And in relationship with another person. And two of the dimensions that it's measuring, one is empathy accuracy. Am I able to understand what your perspective is? But another dimension is empathy compassion. And do I care? Right? Am I able to understand your perspective? And am I actually willing to care about that perspective? And so, wow, what a model for people to start to see. I would say like the psychopath is the one that is very understands what you want, but does not care. And so these two skill sets, I believe, are going to be absolutely 100% critical. The more AI becomes handling anything on the logic side of the equation, the skills that are uniquely human, which are empathy, accuracy, and empathy, compassion, are going to be needed more than ever.
To whatever it comes out with, or challenge it with soul.
Yes. Or, you know, it's kind of interesting. I find that it's also baking in trying to be empathetic, but it's inauthentic. So I don't know if you've played around, but it seems to be very agreeable to whatever I say, right? And which is why we've developed our own AI capacity that focuses specifically on leadership development under models that we've been used for over 20 years, right? Yeah. In the field, we know what works, and we're also not going to agree with you on every little thing that you say. And I worry about that from a perspective of AI, if it's always sort of like, that's a really good point, like all the time, that it's further reinforcing our unwillingness to listen to others because it keeps reinforcing that whatever we believe is right.
I remember I saw
that's
some
the addictive quality of it, right? It's sort of like people want to be told, like, you're absolutely right. You know, if I might put, like, is my boss, you know, a jerk for doing X, Y, Z? And yes, he is. Like, you know, like it's almost hardwired to agree with you because that will keep you coming back. But we've got to recognize, like, there's a slippery slope with that. So, but not a lot of people do that. They're like, show me where my thinking is flawed here. That's not people want to be right and they want to be proven right. And they will use AI to prove themselves right. And AI will comply.
And now I see some of these comments to me. Like I said,
Right.
If you're not careful.
Right, for sure. Look, there's some really, the reason we're embracing it as well is because so people can engage with the content more 24/7. So I think there's powerful opportunities here to leverage AI in the right way. I think it's also just to be careful of your own bias towards wanting the answer that you want and giving you that. I think today authenticity is going to be the currency for a new tomorrow. Really, how do you tell what's real anymore? it's so easy now also to create your own footage of things. Grok can make that happen. I just saw some really wild things where it can make a still image come alive and make it do whatever you want it to do. And it looks incredibly real. Mm. So I think, you know, people's own intuition is going to be where you have to start to rely on versus what you see or what you're told, right?
Yes.
Is the reality. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It is definitely like we've got to kind of come back to ourselves in a way and start building that intuition of questioning. As you're saying before, like, am I being manipulated and stirred up for someone's purpose or not?
Mm-hmm. Your team.
Yeah. What I've seen, the leaders that have been able to do that are, as referring back, deeply connected to their own, let's say, you know, inner wisdom, inner confidence, inner strength. They know themselves well. And I think there's a lot out there to distract you from knowing yourself well. But you only know yourself well if you actually take some time to go within and make that pause to do so. And helping people get back to themselves. And you are your best guide. And you can be curious about what's going on externally. But I think if we keep relying on the external to tell us how we feel, we're just setting ourselves up for a world of hurt to come.
As a leader, you have to work out what other people see you as.
Yeah. Yeah. The other way that we help people see the patterns for themselves and how they might shift them is using music, actually. So I wrote a book called The Leader's Playlist, and it's how to use the power of music and neuroscience to transform your leadership and your life. And I'm using music both figuratively and literally. So tying that back into what we just talked about, starting to discover what is that playlist that's no longer serving you. And because essentially what it is, it's a vibration. It's like a belief that you're putting out there that the world returns back to you. And so music is incredibly powerful because it allows you to build new neural pathways more quickly. And so allows you to create that new perspective, both about yourself and about others, by harnessing that power. So we for individuals, like starting to learn what is that pattern that holds me back and pairing that with some music to interrupt that pattern and then creating a new playlist of what the new belief needs to be and using music to help rewire that and groove it into the brain such that you have more access to it. That's some of the shifting that we do as well. So it's just a whole nother perspective on how shifts in mindset are possible.
So
right.
It's curious.
Yes.
Metaphors in that.
There are, and we can be much more intentional about the music we select by noticing its impact on us. How is it making you feel? What do you notice about that? You know, it was one example. When we go through a breakup, we often like to hear other sad songs because they're mirroring what we're feeling inside, right?
Yeah.
But then if we stay stuck there, that's where it becomes. So I had, there was a girlfriend who went through some tragedy in her life. And, you know, like 6 years later, her whole playlist was like sad songs. And I pointed it out to her. And she's like, you know, you're right. I said, they're sort of keeping you stuck in the past, right? You're stuck in this pattern and you're tripping over your past when you need to be moving forward into your future. What do you want your future to be? And if you have that, let's create, like, what's that new playlist going to be? And she did, and really transformed her life by this simple measure.
But right? It's time to break.
Yes, absolutely. And so if I translate that to an example of how do we use this in leadership, right? Though I'll tell a story. There was a woman I worked with who, very talented chief marketing officer in a biotech company, And however, she was having conflict with her peers in the kind of C-suite. The feedback that came back was that she was not being collaborative in a helpful way, wanting to kind of get upset if she wasn't invited to certain meetings or was left out of key communication. And of course, from her perspective, she's like, I'm the chief marketing officer. I need to know about these things in order for me to be effective. But what I was interested in, what was the playlist she was playing that was having that show up in her experience? And so we started to look at where, you know, when I described to her, what is she feeling when this occurs? And she's feeling frustration. She's feeling like she's being excluded. And so I said, okay, well, let's look where else. Is this a familiar pattern to you? Have you felt this way before? Oh, yes, right? We could go to the ex-husband who now had the lake house that she used to bring the kids to. They used to go as a family, and now the kids went with just him. And she, every time they did that, she felt this same familiar pattern. Or we go further back when, you know, all of her experience, she could very clearly see places she was sort of hypersensitive now to feelings where she realized she had a playlist called I Am Excluded. And so what is her work to do in that is to recognize that that's sort of like there's a patterning and what you look at expands. So she decided to have a song focused particularly to recognize when she's in this pattern and she didn't want to have this pattern anymore. And that was Adele's Hello. You know, the song is sort of like, hello, yes. Can you hear me? I've been calling 1,000 times and you won't pick up the phone. Right. And so she was like, when I feel this way, oh, there's Adele again. So what do I want the new playlist to be? And that's where we looked at. She created a new pattern, which was, again, these are I am statements. I am excluded becomes now for her, I bring peace and appreciation, because she really wanted to focus on what she brought to the community. So in that, she developed a whole playlist of songs that had her be in that experience. And the more she did that, the more life started showing up differently for her, life and her work, such that now people say, we need to bring her in. Like, she has coffee every other week with the person who used to be the one that was excluding her the most, because her energy shifted around that. Their energy shifted. And that's all you really have control over, is shifting your energy at the end of the day. So that's the little example of how music can be used to really shift old patterns and create new ones. Right.
This is my story. It's like, Adele's never going to get you out of bed in the morning.
Yeah. And look, it's not to say that we want, the emotions are very important to recognize and to feel, because they each have information in us. So I'm not saying don't feel this way. You feel what you feel, recognize what it is. It's more about when you get stuck in a pattern of feeling that way, where it sort of like becomes the water you swim in, that's where there's the opportunity to break free. Well, right now I'm looking at music that sort of moves the world. And what is music that's going to have me feel free and empowered to create change that benefits humanity and others? And so the song, I think, has been out for a while, but it's really getting, it's called Love Generation. And it's just a fun song. And so I'm building some other songs like that, because it reminds me of my mission in the world.
I can zone out. I can get you feeling good.
Yeah, I would really encourage listeners to choose a song that represents something to them about how they want their day to go. And play that in the morning.
A lot.
I mean, it's the same looking at, I frequently see it under these 9 patterns, right? Or beliefs. It may be that I can't delegate. I'm the central part. No one does it as good as I can. People don't have my back. These are all kind of ways in which people get stuck and not open to receiving the opportunity that could be there for them. So I would say there's not one, there's patterns of different belief sets. And that's in the book, I detail some examples of these. I go into 8 or 9 different stories of the types of leaders and what their old playlist was, let's say, and where they're getting stuck and what their new playlist was, but also even their actual music that they use to shift that. Well, I think one of the shocking things is you would think at that point, like there would be relief and less anxiety and all those things. So the patterns of that sort of like how what you came up against when you made your money is exactly what you're going to still be dealing with when you have your money. If there was a lot of fear, then the fear will also be present when the fear of losing the money, right? Or it's sort of the same. It doesn't, you don't change. And so you don't change unless you do the work to change.
Yes.
The same emotions can be present because you've developed those patterns over a lifetime. And so, I mean, you'd be surprised. The same challenges they're facing are what other leaders are facing.
Yeah, I can resonate that. I work in a fairly tight small business consulting community across HR and people. And there's a common theme of imposter syndrome and burnout and family and conflict of work. We've all got something, haven't we? And it's very similar, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's no different. And I think I can speak to that. You know, I'm not intimidated by, you know, that level of success. It's still a human being that's still got blind spots and gifts and superpowers. And how can we leverage more of that? But how can we broaden the perspective so that people, again, I'm just most interested in people being free and empowered to create the change that they want to be creating. And helping them see where they put their own self-imposed limits on that and shifting them is the work that I love to do in the world.
I would have thought they would also respect you meeting them where they're at as well. And mm-hmm. they probably get surrounded by people who are scared of them, but you know, scared to speak out, scared to share perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And if you could be yourself around them and be relaxed and be a peer, as opposed to a subordinate, then it must be refreshing for them as well.
Yes, yes. I've heard that exact piece. You know, treat me as like, I'm solid in myself. I'm not going to get,
in awe of anybody. No, it's right. It's either maturity or there's a certain point in your life where you kind of get that, don't you? You kind of become that self-confident, self-assured.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be in awe of anybody. They're just people who happen to have a bigger number of zeros in their bank account than you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a gender difference? You know, is it a female executive prototype or type, or is it very similar traits across the genders?
It's a good question. I feel like I think it's changing generationally, but let's say my generation, I'm in my mid-50s, and the women that have risen through the ranks there's a real sort of like fire a little bit underneath them because they've had to kind of break through some initial bias. And so there's confidence, but also maybe exhausted because that took a lot of energy to get there. For a number
sort of lean in generations, right? Sheryl Sandberg sort of thing, where you're having to reclaim your truth and reclaim your power type generation.
Yeah, that requires a lot of energy to do that. So I recognize maybe some patterns in that for that generation of women and what they've had to claim. And maybe sometimes it comes through in, well, if I had to fight and claw my way, so should you, because that made me who I am. It gave them a confidence, right? But then there's a different expectation, whereas, you know, maybe a different generation doesn't want to have to fight and claw their way. So having that expectation that that's how you need to be in order to be successful, I think is a limiting belief.
Because there's a lot of younger billionaires these days, isn't there? It's not all Warren Buffets in their 70s and 80s. There's a lot of self-made Silicon Valley unicorn leaders in their early 20s making, printing money, being innovative, creating startups. And they're probably a lot more gung-ho, a lot less risk-averse. They're probably more seat of the pants.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think whatever makes us successful in what we do, we think that's the recipe for success that everyone else has to model. And it's not, we're seeing it's not actually the case.
No. But I guess there's a generational challenge as well. Just the lived experience, you know, we talked about it earlier, the perspectives. Yeah. It's coming around full circle. You talked about these nine different leadership styles. I'm guessing then that age, diversity, gender diversity, ethnicity diversity is all in there, and those lived experiences all help contribute. And it's not necessarily true that just because you're 60, you're going to be more cautious, or just because you're younger, you're going to be more gung-ho. That's, again, a stereotype bias, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I think, you know, these different leadership style types, they're not influenced by generation. They're actually how it shows up could be a little bit different, right? Saying how someone is more of like the skeptic and how that shows up, there's just as many in a younger generation as well. I don't see a distinction. I think it's universal.
So which is the rare blood type, you know, the AB negative of the leadership styles, which is the rocking horse who runs, you know, it's hard to find that you know, the last piece of the jigsaw you have to get in your team.
I would say what I see least of, and it may be that I know it has to do with the industries that I'm working with, but it's the type four, which is the intense creative. Typically that type tends to be in more creative, like highly creative fields. And so, but they're really good at crafting purpose and meaning behind the work. So if I'm, you know, I do a lot of work, healthcare, tech, professional services, financial services, those types tend to be missing. But when we do find them, they play in a key role in the team's performance, particularly being able to translate whatever it is that our goal is into like the why, what's the purpose and meaning behind what we're doing. And if anything, I would say the younger generation, they need to hear that. And so the type four is particularly well suited to help making that translation and understanding the why behind what the organization is trying to do.
The way you described that, it seemed to my understanding would resonate with someone who was maybe neurodiverse. That intensity, that hyper-focus, that ability to really be single-focused and creative at the same time. Is that a truism, or is that me just guessing?
I wouldn't say necessarily singularly focused. It's more these types are often able to see perspectives like more in tap with their emotion, the emotional life within them, and because they can get in touch with their own. They can get in touch with yours as well. And through that, they're able to influence in a way that others can't around purpose and meaning. But also they're able to leverage those emotions to be able to bring the creativity into whatever they do. I think those that are most creative are able to tap into, they understand their own emotional life in more depth.
Okay, so flipping on the other side then, which is the O positive, which is the common leadership type, which is the one that we've got that one first. That's the first corner we put in our jigsaw. What's the common type?
Well, typically, I would say more CEOs are type threes or type eights. There are two types that I see very common. A type three is the competitive achiever, and type eight is called the powerful challenger or active controller. Would be another way to describe them. And these two types tend to be the leader types that want to be in charge and leading the pack. So more often than not, when I'm working with a CEO, now that's not always the case by any means. And I love when I get to work with a leader who's in a different format, but I've worked with more threes and eights than any other type at the CEO's spot.
How do you class Barack Obama then? Where do you put him on the...
You know, I don't know. That's interesting. I've never thought to think about what his type is. What's hard is what we're really looking for is what motivates you or drive you. Behavior can vary from person to person. But all we see is behavior. So it's very hard when somebody tries to, I guess, call it like armchair type someone else, because they don't actually know why they're doing what they're doing. And that's what makes it such a rich tool, because if you think of like an iceberg, above the waterline is behavior. That's what we can see. Below the waterline is what's driving that behavior. What's the motivation? And that's what this assessment really looks at. And because of that, really encourage people to, there are some ones out there that do not type people accurately because it's harder. It's a harder thing to assess. You want the ones that are, you don't want the cheapy or freebie ones online. Like, they do not do you justice because they're probably mistyping.
They're horoscopes. They're just horoscopes.
Yeah, they're just not accurate. And so What you really want is the one that is like far more detailed, and one that we use in our programs that is backed by neuroscience, that has over 1,200 questions in the database. They're not asking you 1,200 questions, but they're using fractal mathematics to keep checking and rechecking to make sure that they get an accurate typing. So with Barack, I don't know him well enough to understand when he's described motivation to see whether, otherwise I just look at his behavior and then I could mistype.
Okay, that's a really fair point. As you say, it's backed by neuroscience, and neuroscience isn't sitting in an armchair 1,000 miles away having a guess. So that's the validation we're looking for here. You have to engage in the process, and it has a meaning.
Yes, right. There's a way to, we've got a program called Enneagram Applied, which will both assess but also show you how to leverage that to be able to create your own development plan. And further use those around you to help understand your blind spot in more depth, and leverage them in, we kind of put it a mini 360 model of leveraging those who know you best to further explore that blind spot. Because I'm also a believer, like, an assessment is an assessment. It's more about what do you do with that information that makes all the difference. And so that's why we call it applied, because we want you to apply this information to act for your own growth, not just like give you a horoscope thing.
Have you got any statistics on percentage improvement, or is it not that measurable? I mean, do you measure when you've got 9 pieces of the jigsaw in place versus only 3 pieces of the jigsaw in place? Is there a demonstrable, tangible, quantitative outcome of this?
I mean, if I could zero in, I would have
millions.
The,
yes. You'd be very rich. Yes.
I know, because I see the improvement in the team, but they were making lots of different changes, right? So it's hard to isolate the factor. It's because of this, they start collaborating better, and then they come up with a new idea, and then they bring in a new marketing person. So you can't, it's very hard for people to isolate what was the actual thing, but I know it creates change.
So there's a certain element of cultural shift, isn't there? If you're doing the work, you become invested in the process, you become invested in the outcome, and then you become more aware of each other and different thinking styles and personality traits. And therefore, you're more tolerant of their views, you're more inviting of their views into your views. So I guess it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy as well, where you, by being on the program doing the work, it becomes output, it gets delivered, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It really does. So it's exciting work, and I'm grateful to have been in this field for, like I said, now 25 years with my own firm over the last 20.
Wow. Wow. So it's been fascinating. Absolutely. We could probably talk for another couple of hours, but we've got to get on. How can people get hold of you?
Sure. Well, I want to invite people, if they are curious about their superpower and potential liability that we talked about earlier, to go to susandrum.com and take, I've got a simple free quiz there that will start to illuminate what might be your superpower and liability. But the fun part comes after, because what we'll do is we'll send you, based on how your responses are, the chapter in the book that most relates to that. And so you will get the playlist of the person who might be similar to you, and what they use, what their old playlist title was, what music, and what the new one is. So you can play around and maybe get some ideas if you want to create your own playlist based on what you see might need to shift in your own life from that. So we like to tie those things together, and that's a fun way. So go there. I also have my own podcast called The Enlightened Executive, where we interview leaders and entrepreneurs about their own journey to enlightened leadership. And so those are two great ways to get connected. And of course, my firm is Meritage Leadership, and there's more information there too.
Fabulous, fabulous. So Drum, DURDIUMM, two M's.
Yes,
Drum,
two M's. M's.
Yeah, two M's.
I know. Isn't it funny that I wrote a book about music and my last name is
an instrument? Well, they say that you align with your name. What cover was called?
I don't know
how
this happens, but it does.
A dentist called Dr. Payne or something, and it's right, kind of becomes, There's a thing. I can't remember what it's called now. Maybe someone can write in and tell me, but there's a thing where you become the person by your name. Yeah. Well known theory. I'm gonna go and check that out. I want to find out my playlist, and I want to do some assessment then.
Yeah.
And actually, my free gift back to you is I feed the transcript of these episodes into AI and generate song lyrics out of each episode. So it'd be really interesting to see what the song lyrics come out for this one. And I use an AI music platform called Suno.
Yeah,
to generate
great.
You, I generate you an EP. So I do different music styles, from Bollywood to heavy rock to rock ballads. So it'd be really interesting to see if any of those you go, that's my playlist. That's my song. And so if you're listening to this, I have got an AI playlist of songs from the podcast. So please
that's
check it
fantastic.
Out. And
I can't wait to hear that. Yeah.
Well, it's been absolutely fantastic getting to know you, having a conversation, and. For those listening, check out Susan on LinkedIn, check out all the other platforms, and visit the website. All the details will be in the show notes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.